Okay, is it picking up? It is picking up. We've got fresh batteries, so we should be okay. I want to kind of quickly go through the objections sheet. So that's the one handout that you got. Then we're going to look through the timeline and the other handout. Oh, do you want your thing?
No.
You're okay here? You got it there. Okay, good. So a couple of these we covered before, so I'm just going to kind of quickly review. There's many, but 10 of them at least had a little bit of substance that I thought we would address. Objections to not only the rapture, but especially a pre-trib rapture. So that's the handout you should have. This one, the first one we mentioned a little bit, so I'm just going to touch on it, and that is that phrase in 1 Thessalonians 4:17 that talks about meeting the Lord in the air. That term most often refers to a group that meets the dignitary outside of the city and then escorts the dignitary back in. And so the thinking is that the rapture is a post-trib, so it's right before the second coming. We go out to meet Jesus, and then we come right back here. My comment to that was that might be the most common, but they certainly use that word in the way that we want to, which is a group that's going to be with the dignitary and then going on with him. So we meet the Lord in the air and then we go up to heaven, as opposed to we sort of meet and then he comes back down. So I think it's perfectly legitimate use of that word. The illustration I used was kid. You know, is it a child? Is it a goat? They're both perfectly acceptable uses of the word. So that's it. The day of the Lord, number two, it seems to be a warning for believers to be ready for the day of the Lord. But this is really fits in Paul's context of we need to be godly, and the comparison or the point he's trying to make is you need to be godly. Okay? And just consider those that will be around in the day of the Lord, how their godliness is going to be challenged. And so we're going to see that when we get to the tribulation period, that those who come to know Christ, that is not going to be an easy time at all. Sometimes we think it's hard to be a believer in our society. Think of trying to be a believer when you've got an antichrist, you've got a false prophet, you've got all these things happening. So I think that's the warning, is just remember, look at what they have to go through, then we can live righteously now. Okay? The third one is the Matthew 24. that's the, and I mentioned that famous song, you know, I wish we'd all been ready, and two are walking up a hill and one disappears. And so the disappearing, according to some, would say that's the rapture, but no, actually that's the judgment. Those who are taken are the ones who are judged. And so at the end of or at the rapture, all believers go, but at the end of the tribulation period, all unbelievers are judged. That's what Matthew 24 and 25 is talking about, not the rapture, but the end of the tribulation and the beginning of the millennium. And yes, when Christ comes back, we'll get to that, the sheep and goat nations judgment. All unbelievers will be taken away. That's what Matthew 24 and 25 talk about. So that's kind of the answer to number three. Number four, doesn't it mean there's two second comings? So? It's a second coming in two parts. Just like his first coming was in two parts. His second coming, so he appeared throughout the Old Testament as a pre-incarnate Christ, then he came in at, you know, Bethlehem. So having things happen multiple times is not an issue. So the second coming, yes, there's in two parts of it. Okay? I just don't see that as an issue at all. In the Old Testament, he's called the angel of the Lord. That's most often his designation. So yeah, anytime in the Old Testament, if you see the expression the angel of the Lord, it's a pre-incarnate Jesus. Yeah. We also get a glimpse of that in the fiery furnace. One like a son of the gods was walking around with it. I think Jesus was in there hanging out going, hey, didn't want you to freeze. You know, so they're just kind of hanging out there. So, yeah, but most often it's the angel of the Lord is how we see that. Number five, in Jeremiah, and just for the sake of time, I'm just going to read a couple of these to you. It's a time of Jacob's distress, but he will be saved from it. They're saying, is this not the same language as before, where we're saying that we're saved from the wrath of God? It's that, are we going to go through it and he's going to keep us safe during it, or is he going to take us out of? So we already had that discussion that the word means to take out of. And so in the Hebrew, it's the same idea. Okay, so but the big difference is Israel is the focus of the tribulation period. This passage is written to Israel. Israel has to go through the tribulation period. Unless you're right now a Jewish person who believes in Jesus, then you're gone at the rapture. But Paul and other places, we'll get to that. The Jewish people in mass will come to know Christ. Okay, so the tribulation period, the whole thing, its purpose is to draw Israel back to the Lord. So yes, in that case, they will be saved as they go through it. God is going to be giving protection through that. So we have no problem. Just realize Jeremiah is written to Jews and Paul's writing to believers. Number six, if pre-trib is true, why is there no mention of church in heaven in Revelation 4-19? I made a big point about the fact that the word church is used over and over and over and over 19 times in the first three and not at all in the next. Okay, so I think that shows that we're gone. But this objection is, well, why don't we hear about the church in heaven? And I think we actually do. Revelations 4 and 5 talk about the 24 elders. That seems to be a connection to the church. Okay, Revelation 18:20 use the phrase, you saints and apostles and prophets. They don't use the word church, but we are called saints of God. Okay, saint is just a called one. He's a holy one. Okay, so we're called. So I think that actually does refer to the church in heaven, just doesn't use that term. Number seven, why is Revelation addressed to the church if the church will not experience the tribulation of Revelation 6-19 due to a pre-trib rapture? Okay, interesting question. How would you answer that? Okay, so let me just rephrase the question. Why, John, give us a book telling us about all that's going to happen when we're not going to be here?
Because the Word of God will still be here. We're not, but the Bible will still be here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's the answer. The Bible is still here. So if you didn't make it in the rapture, how do you know what's going to happen? That's going to be a fascinating time, a horrible time to live, but as you now are reading the book of the Revelation, and now you can point to, oh, that's what that, okay, that's how that is. I think people are going to come to know Christ because it is written there. So, yeah, it wasn't written just for Christians of the church age. It's written to believers throughout the ages. And yeah, so I think, I mean, the Bibles don't all disappear. So I think it's there for them. Number eight, this is an easy one. Is there any relationship between the rapture trumpet of 1 Thessalonians 4:16 and 1 Corinthians 15:51-52, the trumpet of Joel 1 or 2, the trumpet of Matthew 24:31, or the trumpet judgments in Revelation 11:15? No. They use trumpets for all kinds of things. So when it says at the last trump, that trumpet is not the trumpet seals. And when we hear about the rapture and the trumpet of God will sound, no. And I think I've given you, I thought I put some notes in there. Otherwise, look those passages up. They use trumpets to symbolize lots of things. So just because it says a trumpet doesn't mean that it's that particular trumpet. Okay. So when they wanted to call people to order, they had a certain trumpet sound. I guess in the military, don't they? Yep. So different types of things mean something else. So it doesn't mean that that trumpet in 1 Thessalonians 4 has to be the seventh trumpet. And that's normally the argument, is it's part of the trumpet judgments. At the last trumpet judgment, That's when 1 Thess 4 says the rapture is. We're going, no, it's a totally different trumpet.
How do you know the difference?
That's a good question. You have to look at the context of what's going on when the trumpet is sounding. So that's the only way to know. Yeah, it gets kind of tricky, but other things tell us that that can't be that. And so it's a little bit derivative. So we're going to see there's 7 trumpet judgments. Paul says, at the trumpet of God will sound. Well, they use a trumpet to call people, to collect people together. And I think that's the trumpet that's being used. It has nothing to do with the trumpet judgments. That's telling people on the earth the next woe is coming to you. So yeah, the context of that helps you to know that trumpet's not that trumpet.
So it makes me think of like when a clock strikes an hour, you get around to the last one.
Mm. Oh. In the 1 Thess 4 passage?
Well, different trumpets. One bell, something's going to happen. One of the games at the different hours.
Right, yeah, the different hours as the wheel turns. Yeah. I think it's more different types of events called for trumpets. So the trumpet, like you say, to collect people, the trumpet call to arms, the trumpet calls to the judgments here. So yeah, I think it more has to do with what event the trumpet is symbolizing. So that's number... See, I don't know. I kind of wish, yeah. So, when the rapture happens, is the world going to hear this trumpet? I don't know. Or will we just hear it and we're going, you hear that? Let's go! Although, let's go means that, but it's blink of an eye, so we'd have to say let's go really quickly. But, yeah. But yeah, I don't know if the world's going to hear that or not. There's nothing that I know that indicates whether it will or not. Number 9's a weird one. Is the mid-trib actually a pre-trib, since the great trib doesn't begin until the middle? Yeah, it's a weird, but I found that in a number of different places. So the idea is, are we saved from the tribulation period or the great tribulation? The Great Tribulation actually does start at about 3.5 years, and we're almost done with that. We're going to give you the timeline. Okay? So the question is, we're still saved from the worst part of it, so is it really a big difference? I think it is. I don't even want to be around for the first part of it, because they're still not nice, and even more, I think the Scripture tells us we're not going to be around for that. So we go back to the verses. So I think that's kind of a weird argument. Hold that. Okay, because yeah, we will get to that. Actually, we'll get to that in our timeline here. And number 10, again, is a confusion. Even to read the question, you need to kind of reword it. But if the church partakes of the first resurrection, which it will, if the first resurrection is described in Revelation 24, it is, does this not point to a post-trib resurrection or rapture? First resurrection takes place in several parts. Okay, so the rapture can be a first resurrection. There is a resurrection of the dead. Even at the rapture, the dead are raised first, then we who are alive. We can't go into heaven with these bodies. Paul tells us that in 1 Corinthians. So there's going to be a change. So even at the rapture, there's multiple steps or parts of all that's called the first resurrection. All the first resurrection means, anywhere you find it, is resurrection of saved folks. You don't want to be a part of the second resurrection. And you won't be, because you know Christ. The second resurrection is a resurrection to death. So the first resurrection takes place at different times to deal with different groups of people at different times in history. So, so you have Christ the first fruits, you have church saints at the rapture, you have Old Testament saints, so, yeah, I don't think any of the objections are strong enough to make me question my understanding of a pre-trib. Okay, I want you to get this, and I'm going to give this out to you as well. So, Ray, I probably should have given you both of these. Oh, yeah, there we go. But I want you to focus on this verse, then I'll tell you kind of why I'm doing it the way I'm doing it. You are being exposed to the way my brain works. Yeah, she's had to deal with that for a long time. Thank you, dear, that's on the recording. Yeah, just keeping it real here, keeping it real. So don't be intimidated by a huge packet, because we're going to cover a bunch of those fairly quickly, but I'll let you get the paperwork. Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So here's the way my brain works. If you try to teach me a new game, because Karen and Matt love playing board games, but theirs have like 50-page instruction manuals, I'll always go, tell me what the end looks like. Am I trying to earn points? Am I trying to earn lives? What am I trying to accomplish? I want the big picture, then I can start figuring out a strategy. Okay? I want to give you the big picture of a timeline. Then we'll start plugging things into the timeline. But rather than just start saying, this is here, and then comes this, I want to see how it all fits first, and then go back and look at each one. So we're actually going to give you that overview three different ways. One, in this picture. Secondly, just simply a list, because if I put everything on the list in here, there'd be too many boxes and you couldn't read a thing because it'd be all jammed in here. Then we'll break each thing down. Okay, so we're going to look at this first. We're going to talk through some of these. Then we'll go to the handout and we'll give you some overview and a basic interpretive position on the book of the Revelation. That'll make sense in a minute. So what I want to do is to essentially say, okay, from the rapture, that is what kicks off not the tribulation period, but at least it's going to be started really soon. So on the left-hand side, you see kind of start. This is the tribulation timeline. Okay, so after the rapture, there's a period of time. We don't know how long that will be. It's never indicated. But the official tribulation period starts with the Antichrist signing a peace treaty with Israel. Okay, Daniel is really clear. When we get to the actual verses, I'll show you those. So don't try and write verses in here. Okay, so we need some time for the Antichrist. So if the rapture happens before class is over, the Antichrist is in world power, and he's out there now, and he's an adult, and we'll spend a whole time talking about not who the Antichrist is, but what nation he might be coming from, what characteristics, all that kind of stuff. But he's then going to sign a peace treaty with Israel. That's something, presidents have done. And, right now, of course, things in the Middle East are not good again. So he's going to somehow pull off that. And at the same time, the two witnesses appear. Okay, you've probably, if you're familiar with the book of Revelation, remember there's two witnesses, okay? And we'll get to that in the notes, but let's just kind of talk through how this works. We're really clear that the two witnesses are going to be killed and then resurrected at the middle of the tribulation, but another passage says that they minister for 42 months. Well, from the middle of the tribulation, 42 months before that is the start of the tribulation. So they have to show up, and the logic, it seems that several of these things are logical. How many believers can share their faith at the beginning of the tribulation period?
None.
Rapture, they're gone. Who's going to start sharing the good news of the gospel? Two witnesses. So you got to get them there. Or now, can a person simply read the Bible and come to faith? Absolutely. Okay. But for world evangelization to take place, these two witnesses are going to kick that off. Okay, so the two witnesses show up. Then you see there's seven seals, seven trumpets, seven bowl judgments. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But see how they overlap. It appears that, and this is an interpretive decision, it appears that the seventh seal judgment are the trumpet judgments. Otherwise, you could read the seventh seal judgment and go, there's really no judgment here. No, the seventh seal, think of it as an outline, seven seals, the seventh seal is really the trumpets. When you get to the seventh trumpet, it's really the bowls. So again, you read the seventh trumpet, it's like no big deal happening here. No, that is encompasses all of the bowl judgments. So we've kind of laid all those out. The 144,000 are going to show up between the sixth and the seventh seal judgment. The two witnesses will be killed right in the middle of the tribulation. That's if the peace treaty is broken. And we'll talk through kind of logically how we think the Antichrist is going to go from a world power to the world power at the middle of the tribulation period. So I just kind of blocked this in here, but we'll get to that detail. So he breaks the peace treaty, does a whole bunch of things. That's the mark of the beast, the 666, and we'll get to that when we get to the Antichrist. Okay. Then you have the bowl judgments. Then at the end of that, the tribulation ends with Armageddon, huge battle. They're battling against Israel. Okay. At the end of the millennium, they're actually going to battle Jesus himself. How stupid can you be? But still, Battle of Armageddon, they're battling Jesus. And then the other part of the second coming. So remember we talked about second coming. Part of that happens at the rapture. He comes, takes us, goes. So it's sort of a, he sort of came, but he only kind of came partway. But this is the, he's going to descend the Mount of Olives, and we'll see all of that. So keep this in mind as sort of an overview. Now, it obviously didn't take me that long to put the chart together. It took me a long time to figure out where to put things. Okay, so now take a look at your other handout. The first couple pages, well, first page we're just going to buzz through. What I wanted to do is just give you an overview of what happens in each chapter. Okay, so chapter 1 of Revelation, there's just a prologue. Then you have the letters to seven churches. You have the throne. So this is sort of a what's in each chapter. So let's jump down to organization. So I can see what page you're on, because my notes. Right now I'm at page 55 of my notes, of pages I've created for that. Okay, so. Oh, okay. Yep, the bottom here. Organization. Depending who you read. So. And I'm going to say this several times. This is an interpretive decision that I've made. I think it fits well, but you can see why at the beginning we talked about systems and some go a different direction. They've made different interpretive decisions. And here's one that I've made. I think it makes sense. There's two ways of looking at the three sets of judgments. Okay, the seals, trumpets, and bowls. A very popular is that the seals, then it just recycles around, and then recycles around again. Essentially, they're three words to mean the same thing. So they're not three separate sets of judgments. It just kind of, it's cyclical, just cycles around. To me, that doesn't make sense because when you read them, the judgments are different. So it's not like the first seal, first trumpet, and first bowl are all the same thing. They're very different judgments. So I don't know how that would even work. So we just throw that one around. That's the cyclical judgment cycle back around. I think what makes the most sense, and again, we'll be getting into that shortly once we get past the overview, is what I've talked to you about the overlapping. Okay, so seven seals. The seventh seal, which when we get to there, by itself, okay, where's the judgment? It's the fact that now that seal is opening up all the trumpet judgments, and the seventh trumpet judgment is all the bowl judgments. So I think it best fits with an overlapping. Another interpretive decision is where to figure out what's chronological and what's topical. I complained to Barb this week, I wish John were an American author who wrote in outlines. He didn't. So part of the book of Revelation, it starts very topically. Okay, so there's really no chronology to the first three chapters. John's going to introduce the book, say he's going to talk about seven churches, I don't personally see those as seven church ages within the church age. So they'll say we're in the Laodicean age. I think we're reading more into those than John intended. That's topical. Then we get to chapter 4. That's sort of topical. Then he gets chronological for a while. Then he gets into another topic. And what's hard is the topics jump back to previous chronology. So when he gets to the topic of the Antichrist and the false prophet, he's actually going to jump back chronologically. He's just decided, let's just now wrap up everything here and talk about the Antichrist. Okay, that's good. Okay, let's jump back into chronology. Now let's talk a little bit about, oh, by the way, let's talk about Rome. And then he kind of paused the chronology, but in his topic, he kind of refers back to some things that happened earlier. And then, okay, now let's get chronological again. Now we'll talk about the bowl judgments or whatever. Oh, by the way, let's talk about, and he just keeps jumping into topics in the middle of his chronology. What's chronological, what's topical, sometimes is hard to figure. We do have clues where it will say, and then the fourth trumpet sounded. Okay, that's a chronological kind of statement. But some of these chapters, as you look through there, chapter 17, 18, here he's just talking about Rome. It's a topic. There's no chronology necessarily happening there. Then 18, the city. You get chapter 10, this little scroll, just this random topic in there about this little scroll that gets opened, but it helps to make sense of other things, but it's hard if we're thinking what comes after what. Okay, so I've tried to do as best I can to come up with a chronology, and then other weeks that we meet, we'll come up with topics. Okay, so I'm going to try and use John's approach, although I'm going to skip all the topics first and walk through the whole chronology. Then we'll come back up and pick up the Antichrist, the false prophet. We'll pick up what does Rome look like, what's the false church. So we'll pick up some topics as we go. So that's when you read through the book of the Revelation, realize that you do have that thing going on. Topic, chronology, topic, chronology, topic, chronology. And trying to figure out what's what sometimes gets a little bit tricky. Okay, so let's go to, let's see, in your notes, it's where it says timeline of the rapture and tribulation. Oh, the very bottom. Okay, we said this before, the rapture could take any time, could take place any time. And this is just the overview, then we're going to come back and get into the meat. So if you're going, where's the verse on that? We'll get to that. Again, my brain, I want to see the big picture, I want to get the overview, then let's look at the details. So, the rapture can happen anytime. Somewhere we have to place the judgment seat. We don't know when exactly it's going to take place. We do know where. The judgment seat, Paul talks about it a couple different places. And we'll get to the topic of judgments on a different Sunday. I forget what Sunday I've blocked that in. But somewhere around the 17th, 18th. Or 17th of November, something like that. So we'll talk about the judgment seat. It's a judgment for believers. It's the wood, hay, and stubble. It's the reward judgment. It's Paul. Does Paul warn us, or does Paul just inform us we will all stand before the judgment seat of Christ? I think that carries a warning, so you better live like you ought to. But somewhere that's going to take place. It's in heaven. It's hard to place that somewhere on our timeline. Okay, then the tribulation period starts. Again, we don't know how long after the rapture. The Antichrist comes to power. Now, in Daniel, when we get into the detail, we're going to see this is the ten horns and the one that supplants the three. So somehow the Antichrist is going to have more power. I'm assuming he's the president of a country, but it doesn't necessarily say that. But I'm thinking he's got to have some power already, and he's got to have some authority to then be able to step in and sign a peace treaty. So my assumption, he'll be the president of a country, but we'll also wait till we get to Antichrist. He's going to come to power, sign the peace treaty with Israel, and then he's going to allow sacrifices. I think a big part of the peace treaty is Muslims, you have the Dome of the Rock there. Israel, you can have that. Rebuild your temple. Nobody's been able to pull that off. Now, technically, to start sacrifices, all you need is an altar. You don't need a temple. But there's several places in the book of the Revelation that talks about the temple. So the abomination of desolation, middle of the tribulation period, he goes into the temple. So you have to have a building.
I got a question. Isn't the rapture supposed to happen after the temple was built?
Oh, no. There's nothing that has to happen before the rapture takes place. Yep. Including rebuilding the temple. So, sacrifices are going to begin. All you need is an altar. They could put that together in 4 hours. You know, so it's not going to take a long time to put stones into an altar kind of officially. You know, depending who you read, you know, they've already got the plans for the temple. They've already got the artifacts built for the temple. Some of that seems a little sensational, but some of that could be very true. Because, I mean, the Jews want a temple. And they want it on the Temple Mount. To put it anywhere else isn't going to work. Okay, so I think part of what brings the Antichrist to power is somehow figures out how to get the Muslims to allow the Jews to put a temple on the same property on the opposite end. Okay, short rabbit trail. Saw a show on archaeology several years ago that Solomon's temple probably actually was not exactly where the Dome of the Rock is. It was on the other end and could easily then be rebuilt and not have to tear down the Dome of the Rock. Okay, that would fit really nicely here. You guys, you're okay. We're not tearing you down. You guys build right here. And it will be the site of the original temple. So this will be the third temple. You had Solomon's temple destroyed. You had Zerubbabel's temple, which King Herod vastly improved, destroyed. This is the third temple then. Okay, so the sacrifices start up, I think, right early at the beginning of the tribulation period, so the Jews are real happy. So first half of the tribulation period, somewhere I think the two witnesses begin really early because we're told that they minister for 42 months. Okay, then you have the first six seal judgments. Okay, so on your timeline, I have those in there. The calling of the 144,000, we'll spend time with that. Those are not Jehovah's Witnesses, by the way. Not when he lists 12,000 from all 12 tribes of Israel. It's a little hard to say those are Jehovah's Witnesses. Seal judgment, and then you get the first six of those. Now you're in the middle of the tribulation period. Crazy events here. We don't know much about one, but the Antichrist is, I should have put this in quote, he's sort of killed. We don't know what that kind of looks like. It appears that he has a fatal wound to the head and then recovers from it. And people are going, whoa. Yes, must be God or empowered by God and let's follow him. At the same time, the two witnesses are killed, as in dead. Yeah, we'll talk about it here, and then we'll get to the details in a little bit. So two witnesses are killed. What we know about the two witnesses is for the 42 months, nobody could harm them whatsoever. Yes, question.
Two witnesses, so obviously they were not believers.
No, they are absolutely believers, yeah.
So they weren't raptured up?
No, these are, yeah. Right, and we'll get to potentially who they are. And there's pretty strong guess at one of them,
Elijah.
And there's some pretty mixed guesses as to who the other one is. But we'll get to those. But yeah, these are not humans at all. Yep. So first 42 months, you can't touch them. Now this guy who recovers from what appeared to be a fatal wound kills them. Dead. That is a man with power. That is a man worth following. I have a whole message I preach on the Christmas in Revelation. People are so thrilled, they kind of throw a party. They're giving gifts to each other and everything else. It's sort of like Christmas again. And they put them out for everybody to see. I'm sure CNN and everybody's got their cameras on there. And then they get alive again. Then they're resurrected. It's like it is on every camera, and all of a sudden they just sit up, go, I'm back. Well, not exactly, but yeah. And if you don't get the movie reference, forget it. So yeah, and then they're taken to heaven. It's like, whoa. But I think they'll come up with some excuse for why they're taken to heaven. This Antichrist, who appeared to be dead, came back from the dead, killed these two men that nobody else has been able to kill. He is now the world power. So that's why I say he becomes a world head. Now, some of the order of events in here, I don't know. That's the mark of the beast. So the Antichrist and the false prophet, that's the mark of the beast. That's the 666. That's the forehead. That's the right hand. At that point, he breaks the peace treaty. He's a world leader. He can do anything he wants to. Breaks the peace treaty with Israel. That's the abomination of desolation. That's where he sets himself up in the temple, referred to in Daniel, referred to a couple other places. And we hear, see in the book of the Revelation, he sets up an image, and people have to worship that, and it's a talking image. We'll get to that when we get to Antichrist. But that's the abomination of desolation. Crazy thing, though, most of the people I read this week said that that was completely fulfilled in a man called Antiochus Epiphanes. That there is no future fulfillment for that. It's like, nope. Remember, clear back to the beginning. You can look at the book of the Revelation. I see it as futuristic, not historistic. I think this is talking about a future. So the abomination of desolation, the Jews flee. So the Jews take off. As many as you possibly can. That's where you get to Matthew 24, 25, in that where, don't grab your cloak, just go. If you're on the rooftop, just come down and go. Get out of there, go. Then you have the question, where are they going to go to? Lots of opinions. Petra is often mentioned as a location that they're going to go to. The false prophet promotes the Antichrist. That whole thing is the middle of tribulation. Then the last half of the tribulation, you have all the trumpet, or the last trumpet, all the bowl judgments. Then you get to Armageddon and a crazy passage in Daniel. So Armageddon, it's the big battle. So all the nations are gathered up against Israel. Somewhere in here, you have the marriage supper of the Lamb. All we know is it has to take place before the second coming, because in the official second coming, we're coming down presented as the bride of Christ. Okay, so it has to happen someplace. It's in heaven. Did it happen at the beginning of the tribulation, right after the judgment seat? We don't know. It never tells us when. It just refers to it right before the second coming. Is that chronological or is that topical? It seems to be in a chronological section. So I think it's going to happen shortly before the official second coming, Revelation 19, where we come down. Then these 30 days, okay? 30 days, and then you'll see 45 days, question marks. We'll get to that. There's one passage in Daniel that throws different dates out. We have always been looking at 7 years divided into half. So 3.5 years, sometimes called 42 months, 1260 days. They're all the same thing. Then you get Daniel, which says something about 1290 days. But blessed are those who make it to the 1335th day. Nowhere else ever does it say anything about that. I have a guess, but you have to wait. So I think the 30 days happens there. Then the second coming, the Mount of Olives is split. Rome is destroyed. The Antichrist and false prophet are destroyed. The Jewish people get saved. Then this mysterious 45 from 1290 to 1335, mysterious 45 days, I've got at least some logic that tells me where it might be. Sheep and goat judgment, and then Satan's bound for 1,000 years, the millennium. 1,000 years, we're with Jesus, we're here, we're back. Okay, lots of things, we'll get to that as a topic. Then the end of that, Satan's released for a short time. What short? I don't know. 20 minutes, 2 hours, 3 weeks, a month, I don't know. Lots and lots of people follow him. Who are they? Unsaved people who were born during the millennium who never put their faith in Christ. They have to get saved the same way you and I did. Okay, so they have to put their faith in Jesus. Many don't. Huge rebellion against Jesus himself. The Jews are not the target there. rebellion against Jesus himself and the final deception. So Satan's deception, the final battle, final destruction of Satan, the white throne judgment. Nobody that goes to the white throne judgment goes to heaven. It is purely a heaven and hell judgment. Then eternity future, new heavens, new earth. So that's the overview of all this time frame here. Poor Jeff's class got frozen out. Did library work okay? Or?
Oh, no, we're out there.
Okay.
Jacob's teaching today.
Oh, is he? Cool. Let's get you some paperwork here. Here's the ones that we're on right now.
Short timer, sorry.
That's okay. So, I want to do the, that's the huge overview that takes that that timeline sheet and just adds a whole bunch of other stuff that I couldn't add in there. Now let's break that down a little bit more. And again, I've given you lots of at least references, so I'm not going to read through a number of these things. I'll just tell you what they are. So let's go back to, we've talked about the rapture, and I could talk about that. So tribulation period starts. They're the key passage. We've seen it before, so let me just read it. Daniel 7, 24 to 25. The 10 horns are 10 kings who will come from this kingdom. After then, another king will arise, different from the earlier ones, Antichrist. Okay? He'll subdue 3 kings. He'll speak against the Most High. Why is he called the Antichrist? Because he is speaking against God. He's anti-Christ. He's anti-God. He will oppress his saints. Who's his saints at this point? Jewish people. And try to change the set times and the laws. Wait on that till we get to the Antichrist. The saints will be handed over him for a time, times, and half a time. So he has come to power. When he's in power, then a couple chapters later in Daniel, and he will make a strong covenant with many for 1 week. So he's going to make a 7-year covenant with the Jewish people. During that time, sacrifices are allowed. Let's look at this one. Revelation 11. Revelation 11. So, sacrifices are allowed. Again, this is a topic, so we have to fit it in chronologically. So, at least sacrifices, at some point the temple will be rebuilt. But again, all they need is an altar for sacrifices. So, Revelation 11, 1 and 2. I was given a reed like a measuring rod and was told, go and measure the temple of God and the altar and count the worshipers there. A little hard to measure it if it doesn't exist. Has to exist. The temple and the altar, so we know they're separate items. So sometime in that first part of the tribulation period, the temple will be rebuilt. Whether they build the altar and then build stuff around it, that we don't know. But exclude the outer court. Do not measure it because it has been given to the Gentiles. Interesting. Who else is going to share the Temple Mount? The Muslims, the Dome of the Rock. I think that is John's way of saying, don't know what that's going to look like, but you're going to have to share that Temple Mount. The outer court, which would have been where the temple, where the Dome of the Rock is, that would be have been in the outer court. Don't measure that because the Gentiles have that. They will trample on the holy city for 42 months, 3.5 years. Okay. So, Antichrist comes to power. Signs this 7-year peace treaty. We know he's going to break it in the middle with 3.5 years. And somehow sacrifices are allowed. So they get an altar together. They rebuild a temple. And that's the very beginning of the tribulation. Now, where again, in that the temple is built, we don't know. And then the two witnesses. So you're in 11. Yeah, just continue. Verse 3. And I will give unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. Okay. Who's the famous guy that we know went around ministering in sackcloth? John the Baptist. Okay? So, these guys are not GQ kind of guys straight out of the store. You know, these are pretty ruddy looking guys. We will talk about those as a topic. These are sent by God indestructible for the first 42 months. They're the ones, I think, that begin the world evangelism, because you're going to have a lot of people come to know Christ during the tribulation period. So two witnesses start. Again, they have to start really early, because at 42 months they're going to be killed. So back up 42 months and they have to be at the beginning. Okay, then the seal judgments. And again, I'm giving you the passages. The first seal judgment is the rise of the Antichrist. Let's just look at a couple of these. I've got lots of corresponding verses. But back up a few chapters, Revelation 6. An interesting section here because of some of the words that John chose to use. Revelation 6. I think that the first seal judgment is the rise of the Antichrist. Why? Verse 1 and 2, chapter 6. Now, I watched when the Lamb opened one of the seven seals. So the Lamb is obviously Jesus. Okay, so these are judgments instituted, governed by Jesus. And I heard one of the four living creatures say with a voice like thunder, "Come," and I looked and behold a white horse. White horse is the good guys, right? No, the white horse is a guy imitating a good guy. So I think that's interesting that he uses a white horse there. Its rider had a bow and a crown was given to him, and he came out conquering and to conquer. Crown, authority, leadership. Again, I think he's going to be the president of a country. It doesn't say that specifically, but this implies some kind of authority. I mean, he's given a crown. And what is he doing? He's conquering, and he came to conquer, which is what the Antichrist is going to do. Okay? So the Antichrist comes in. That is a judgment on the world, because the Antichrist has zero desire for the good of the world. Okay? He's going to be just like most leaders, maybe that's a little strong, but probably not, of developing countries. It is a power, it's a money issue. Why is Haiti troubled right now? Because the president is not sharing the wealth. There's lots of things. But you get those. I mean, go to South America. Lots of the countries in turmoil. Why? Because you have a leader who's only looking out for himself. Okay? So, seal judgment one, rise of the Antichrist. I think seal judgment two shows his nature. Okay? So just continue. When he opened the second seal, I heard a second living creature say, "Come," and out came another horse, bright red. Now, different horse doesn't necessarily mean it's a different person. It's a different character that we're being shown. Its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth so that people should slay one another, and he was given a great sword. At some point, the Antichrist is going to then shift from a leader to becoming more and more of a world leader, which I think will be solidified in the middle. Okay, one of the things the Antichrist is going to do is to kill a lot of people. Okay? We're going to see that somewhat in the first half. Once you get to the second half, unlimited power. Between him and the judgments of God, billions of people will be killed. Billions of people. Wow.
Still seal judgment too?
I think so. Yeah, that seal. Now he's showing his nature is he's a man of destruction. Okay? Seal three. Disease, famine, and food shortage. When he opened the third seal, I heard a third living creature say, "Come," and I looked, and behold, a black horse. And its rider had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard what seemed like the voice in the midst of four living creatures saying, "A quarter of wheat for a denarius, and three quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and the wine." Okay, I think this is, again, the results of mostly the Antichrist's political positions that he takes. Okay, we haven't really seen yet judgments on the earth. They're coming, but I think these are political decisions. A denarius is what a person in that day would earn in a day. So essentially, you're saying your entire day's wages will buy a quart of wheat. That's the minimum that you need to live on. Or you can get three quarts of barley, and hopefully you're not celiac at that point, because all that barley and wheat, you would be dead. But yeah, so huge economic issues there. So because of that, I mean, the whole world economy is just really messed up if you take everything that you have earned for the day just to put food on the table. Huge famine, food shortages, all that kind of stuff. Okay. It is not going to be a fun time to live there. And it's just the third seal. You've got lots more seals, trumpets, and bowls. Seal 4. Just continue reading. Chapter 6. When he opened the fourth seal, heard a voice of the fourth living creature saying, "Come," and I looked, and behold, a pale horse. Its rider's name was Death, and Hades followed him. So symbolism there. Where do people go when they die? They go to Hades. Okay, so it's like the Grim Reaper. So think of that. The Grim Reaper is following him around. They were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with a sword and famine and pestilence and by wild beasts of the earth. Okay, fourth of every person living on the planet is going to be killed. They're either going to starve to death, the beasts of the earth who are also running out of food, they're just going to go crazy and start eating people. And he has a sword, so he's killing people. And people are starving. And you have animals going crazy. A fourth of the earth. Okay, right now we have, what, 7+ billion people? So almost 2 billion people killed just in this seal. Yeah. Because you have an Antichrist that doesn't care about people. He's Antichrist. Okay. Are some of these people saved? I think so. We're going to see passages that talk about the martyrs. The martyrs during this tribulation period that at one point cry out to the Lord, "How long? How long till you finally end this thing?" And they don't get quite a clear answer, at least not the answer they wanted to. But yeah, so I think the Antichrist will be killing people who have come to know Jesus, whether through the two witnesses or obviously the witnesses from those two witnesses. But yeah.
Isn't the Antichrist supposed to be this person who's supposed to do good at the beginning? This is not good. He's not allowing good things.
I don't know that I would say he does good. He just allows Israel some freedoms that they haven't had. Freedoms to build the temple. Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's a good question. I don't know that there's any place that he's good. Yeah.
Appears. Yeah, he looks good.
Oh, he looks good. Smooth tongue, and the false prophet especially. I think the false prophet's definitely a politician. You'll see my anti-political. I mean, he is smooth tongue. He's going to convince people. Yeah.
And it does say that it is a he, right? Or is that just a figure of speech? Because I've seen Oprah and Ellen and Elizabeth Warren all wear crowns before. So.
Yeah. Yep. We'll get to the Antichrist. I do think it's a he. Okay. But yeah. That's an easy one for me to answer if I go back. I just have to look at the Greek text. There's a term for a person, and there's a term for a male person. Let me look and see. Good question there. Okay. And so, because of that, you get to seal 5, the martyrs. He opened the fifth seal. I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the witness they had borne. They cried out with a loud voice, "O sovereign Lord, holy and true." So they're saying, you know what you're doing, but how long before you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Then they reach given a white robe and told them, just rest a little longer. What's Hebrews talk about? Rest. You're with the Lord. You're finally in that time of rest. So just, I mean, this is a pretty great place. Okay, you haven't seen everything yet, but it's a pretty great place. Just rest. Until the number of their fellow servants and their brothers should be complete. Which is interesting. There is a number that God has in mind for how many people will be killed. If he knows the hairs in your head, then he knows how many people will be martyred for him. It's just an interesting little expression thrown in there to say, I got this. Okay, got this. I know exactly who I'm going to call to be killed for my sake. Okay. So yeah. You get the martyrs that are just going, ah, what is going on? So you might say, where's the judgment? So this is a sealed judgment. The judgment is just a reminder of what's going on. So this is sort of, in a sense, a passive, but it's reminding that people are being martyred by the bunches. So we think the Holocaust was bad, and it was, obviously. This is going to be worse than that. Okay? We get to the sixth seal, judgment on the earth. Finally, judgments on the earth. He opened the sixth seal, verse 12. I looked and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth. The moon became... So, what happens when there's earthquakes, volcanoes, and all that kind of stuff? What happens to dust? Goes up, it blocks the sun. Okay, so sun became black as sackcloth. If you were on the International Space Station, the sun still looks like the sun. Okay, if you're on the Earth, where'd the sun go? Well, there's too much dust in the sky. Okay, the moon became like blood. Again, you're trying to look through all that stuff. Fascinating pictures after Mount St. Helens. The cloud. I've got a bunch of residual stuff in my office that I bought when I was at Mount St. Helens. But yeah, everything just looked really crazy. The stars of the sky fell to the earth. Huge meteor storms. Sovereignly produced, I believe. Lord's saying, hey, big earthquake, boom. Now you can't see well. And now you've got these shooting stars much more than ever. The fig tree shed its winter fruit when shaken by a gale. So they weren't quite ripe, but... And they just start all falling off, which means they're not going to be ripe, which means they're not going to produce. You're not going to be able to eat them, not going to be able to get oils and all that. The sky vanished like a scroll that's being rolled up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. This is one big earthquake. Kings of the earth and the great ones and the generals and the rich and the powerful and everyone slave and free hid themselves in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains, calling on the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who's seated on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of their wrath has come, and who can stand? Now judgment on the earth. This is bizarre. We know it is from you. We don't care. The defiance is just crazy. And they know. This is not just a natural thing. They know it's not a natural thing. You've had the two witnesses telling them. You've got now hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of people who've come to know Christ who are giving a witness. They know. They could pick up the book and read it if they want to. It's written out. So the people then, they could read this. So, yeah. So they would rather be smashed by the mountains and the rocks than face God and submit to him. That kind of defiance is extraordinary. And we're going to see that again and again as they do these and they literally just shake their fist at God. We know it's you. We refuse to follow. Ah, bizarre.
It's happening now.
Oh, it is. Yep. It is happening now. Yeah. It depresses me too much.
I know, I don't watch it either. I only see it when I click through something, but
yep. So we'll pick up next week with 144,000. We should be able to finish walking our way through that. So yeah, thank you.